Downtown Detroit recording live. Prepare yourself for a hoppy drive. If you're chilling at home, pop that growler and just kick back for the next 2 hours. It's the end of the week, so here's to the weekend. It's Better on Draft with Rob, Matt, Nick, and Ken.
How's it going, everyone? Welcome to episode number 220. You know, I do this 227 every single week. I've been doing this 227 fucking shows every single week. I still got it. I drop an F-bomb within the first minute. You know, it is Friday. It is July 17th. We are still doing this via Zoom, which is perfectly fine because I get to talk to you lovely people each and every week, which just makes my weekend. You know, everyone, I'm all excited. Like, you work towards this moment. I am excited to drink, but I am going to start with Robert. What are you drinking and how are you doing?
I am doing all right. Gone through a few things this week, but everything is working out A-okay, and everybody is still healthy. I finally replaced my alien mask, as you will see right here. It works out very well and freaks people out. But right now I'm drinking Batch Brewing's version of Black is Beautiful. It's about to crack that open. This is their Imperial Stout. It's brewed with raspberries, cocoa nibs, and espresso.
All right. Yeah, I actually had that last week because I went in and got a glass. And I want to show you because I think this is the first time we may have done this on the show. So I know you're drinking Batch. I am also drinking Batch in this glass, which is Autonomous Collective. And don't worry, because I'm not double fisting, I'm pitchering today. So this is what I'm
well.
Dan, you roll your eyes as if we don't drink pitchers. Like, we buy our own separate pitchers just so we don't have to share.
I know.
So speaking, Dan, what are you drinking over there?
You know, I'm pulling the Nick today. I got a couple of things here. I've got an Intrepid Orchid from Bottle Logic. It's a vanilla barley wine, barrel-aged. Let me say it again. Barrel-aged vanilla barley wine.
Oh, my God.
And then I've got a Camper Red from Simple Machine. It's a nice light red ale. It's not too bad, but a little too light for my likes these days compared to this. Barley wine.
We have to ask, what is the weather over there?
Oh, it's only about 108 right now, I think. It's actually pretty nice.
Only
it's probably nicer here than it is there, if I'm thinking how it is there right now.
It's a bit muggy, that's for damn sure. I'm definitely feeling it. I didn't want to have background noise, so I turned the fan off behind me, and I'm definitely regretting that right now. But Wendy, what's going on? How are you, and what are you drinking?
I am fantastic. I'm actually enjoying the lower temperatures, even though the mugginess has taken its toll. Today, I am drinking a Mitten Brewing Company Triple Crown Brown. And rather than pull a Nick, I thought I would pull a Ken, and I'm going to follow that up with a Mitten Brewing Triple Crown Brown.
The same can twice.
Thought I'd try something new today.
Nice.
Nice.
And speaking of Nick, are you pulling a Nick?
When am I not ever pulling a Nick?
I don't know.
About to say. So I actually had some stuff brought to me by my mom after she left her house. She sold her house a couple weeks ago and brought me the beer that I left there after I moved out to move in with my now wife. So this is gonna be very interesting because I don't know how well this actually aged. It probably didn't. I got some Ukrainian beer, it's called Obolon. I don't know, nice cool green bottle. We'll see how bad it is. And Dan, this one's probably more for you because you like Mastodon, right? The band?
Yeah, of course.
I got a Mastodon Mars Brau, the Hunter. It's a German beer. I don't know what kind of German beer, but bottled by Mars Brau in Bamberg, Germany. And so,
nice.
And it has Mastodon on it. So we'll see how that is.
Oh, it's guaranteed to have water, wheat, and house.
So it's the light or the dark.
I think it's lighter. And you know what? For being a few years old, it's still pretty good.
There you go.
All right.
I just want you to know when I left beer at my parents' house, my dad just drank it. He didn't bring it back.
Dad tax.
I'm the only one that really drank beer in the house. My mom doesn't drink. My dad was a Bloody Mary guy, and I was the beer guy, or just alcohol in general.
Yeah,
more for me.
I'm actually trying to find the episode that we did, and I can't. But I remember when we did the metal beers episode, and we had a bunch of beers that were made by metal bands. They're like sponsored. Oh, yeah.
I think this was supposed to be one of them. I think.
Yeah, I don't.
That's how old it is.
Probably. I remember we had Badass, and I think it was getting brewed by Atwater at the time, or officially it was like Badass Brewery in Detroit, but it was brewed by Atwater because it was brewed by Hazen. But we do have a guest sitting so patient, so quiet. Thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you introduce yourself, tell us where you work, and what you do there.
My name is Chris Andrus. I'm the co-owner and co-founder of the Mitten Brewing Company. With our headquarters in Grand Rapids, we have small pubs in Northport, Michigan, and Saugatuck, Michigan. And I'm drinking not my own beer. Total fail, I know. Drinking a Founder's Solid Gold.
Well, I'm pretty sure you probably drink enough of your own beer because you got to taste it to make sure that
I had a few at lunch today, so that counts.
Well, as they always say, you can't drink all day unless you start in the morning. So
that's right.
Mm-hmm. I started my campaign today to get my boss to allow me to drink beer while I'm getting paid.
Good luck with that.
I'm trying.
So how did Mitten Brewing come about? What is the origin story for Mitten Brewing?
So we opened in 2012, and I was actually a professional singer-songwriter for the decade prior to that. And my business partner and friend since first grade, Max Treweiler, had been working for a marketing company for a long time, and he wasn't going to go any further at that company. So he and I started talking about doing something together. I had given music my best shot. And I remember sleeping in the van one night in outside of some bar in Ohio as I was did just turned 30. And I realized I'd passed my expiration date and it was time to do something else. So we started, chatting about doing something together. And we brought a homebrew kit, just like a lot of brewery owners do. I started talking about it. We took it super seriously, way too seriously. Like, even from the first batch we made, we were reading the textbooks and trying to get that first beer right. We brewed the same beer like 50 times in a row to try to get it perfect. It wasn't like, some dudes brew in the garage and drink as much as they do anything else. Not us. We had all the refractometers and we were trying to get it right. We were pretty nerdy about it, actually, to tell you the truth.
What was the first beer that you were brewing, that you rebrewed
pale ale.
Times? Just a pale ale?
Pale ale, yep. It's now Mitten Pale Ale.
But oh, okay.
We were such fans of the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. That was our gateway beer. And we kind of had the west side of Grand Rapids in mind for our location. And it's very much we were the first brewery there since Prohibition. So we knew we had to have like that ambassador beer, that beer that everyone can drink. We couldn't come out with only hop bombs. It would have driven people away. So I don't know. That's how we started. And I still think that's the most important style to do. I'll judge a brewery on their pale ale more than anything else. It's deceptively difficult to get right. And I think it's the canary in a coal mine when you're going to a brewery. See if their pale ale is any good before you go anywhere else.
I think a lot of breweries are the exact same whenever they go. Because we've been doing this for almost 5 years now. And whenever we talk to a brewery, one of the big things is that they want to try your pills, your pale, or your Kolsch. Like if they see one of those three beers in there, because those are the three beers you really can't hide behind.
Yep. So you're going to see how clean the process is in those beers.
Exactly. Which maybe that's why you were really hard on yourself doing 50 times for that pale ale just to get it right. Mm-hmm. Are you currently brewing or are you just on the business side right now?
So we thought we would brew. Max and I did. We thought we'd run the business, brew the beer, everything. That was stupid because right away we realized there was way too much to do. And we started with a 3-barrel system, and on opening night, we ran out of a couple batches and we were like, we're screwed. This system is way undersized. So now we have 5 full-time brewers. We have 2 brew houses. We have the 3-barrel in the pub. We have a 20-barrel production brew house across the street. And that's where our offices are as well. So unfortunately, I don't do much brewing, if at all, but some of the original beers we used to make are still being made and are some of the best sellers. Peanuts and Cracker Jack Porter. That was a homebrew. Country Strong IPA is my recipe. Mango Gold, I worked with the brewers to develop. So I'm still getting creative input in, but
for my own personal need, we made a peanut butter pale ale over at Atwater in the Park. And we got reamed because apparently the Mitten Brewing is the only brewery that can make this beer. So for the public, if you don't mind, can you approve that I made that beer and it was okay?
Not
that
it
tasted okay.
Don't do
it. It was just okay to make.
It's a trap. it's okay with me. Just don't make a better one. That's all.
Brad over there does really, really good, but he had me and Matt Bush helping him, so I know that didn't help at all. We were really good at drinking the double decadent mint chocolate chip beer for sure. So what was great to hear is that Wendy was so excited to talk to you, because there is a huge story about Mitten Brewing that a lot of people may not know about, and I'll let her get into it a little bit and ask you some questions.
So one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to at work, besides, you know, us, of course, is That's Why We Drink. And their format is they've got one girl that talks about paranormal activity, that tells a paranormal story, and one girl that tells a true crime story. So it's like the best of both worlds for someone like me. Yeah. So I was super excited to ask questions about your brewery. I'm so geeked. It's ridiculous. So
you're
I would
totally
like you to tell us
right now.
I am. I would like you to tell us one of your stories about stuff that's happened. Like, I saw that you even had the Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters come in, all that. I mean, that to me is amazing. So I would like a story.
Well, thank you. And also the show Ghost Hunters on whatever network it's on now, they're supposed to be coming.
Oh, that's cool.
They had to push it back because of COVID, but we signed all the papers and everything, so they're gonna send the Taps crew out to do an overnight at the Mitten. So I've always been interested in the paranormal. We used to go ghost hunting in high school all the time. We used to go look for the Ada Witch, all the haunts around here in Grand Rapids. So our building, if you haven't been there, it's a Victorian fire barn. It's built in 1891. Firemen have lived and died in that building. It closed in 1966 as a firehouse and went into private use. But so when we got the building, we started stripping everything back to the bones. And we were there late at night every night, ripping down walls. And we started to hear things, started to hear our names being shouted or footsteps. We'd see shadows moving in the corner. And at first we were kind of shrugging it off, and then it kept happening. And we didn't talk about it with each other until four or five times. I'm like, dude, are you hearing this? He's like, oh my God, I don't want to say anything. I feel like someone saying our name in the next room. And you could hear feet dragging on the floor. And we were working 16-hour days. So we were there morning till night, and we had the little lamps that you clamp onto things. We didn't have lights or anything. Yeah. So the shadows were long. And we started seeing things, and we talked to a man that used to live in our building before we got it from him. And we asked him if he ever saw any ghosts or anything. And I'll never forget, he just froze. And he's like, yeah, what did you guys see? I'm like, what did you see? And he's like, I've seen it. You know, I've seen a full body apparition. I've seen things walk into my room, in and out of it. It's nothing you need to be afraid of. It's nothing dangerous, but just know that it's there. And then we were super scared. But so then a long time went on when nothing happened. But the common thread being that every time we change something drastically in that building, there's this surge of activity. So anytime we're remodeling or renovating or changing the way the building's laid out, it seems to stir up something. So opening night or opening week, I was the last one to leave the engine house and the first one in the next day. So I mopped all the floors. And you know how if you leave mop water wet and you walk through it or something, you have these little footprints and like these little white soapy footprints. So I mopped it, locked it, went home, came back the next morning, and I go into the front lobby and I see there's barefoot footprints dried in the mop water in the front lobby. And I'm the only one with the key. Max, we were supposed to open many months before, but he had planned his honeymoon for what ended up being our opening week. So he was not there. It was non-refundable. It was long days for me. So basically I was opening and closing the joint every night. So I saw these footprints and I got up closer and looked at them and saw they were child's footprints. It was like a little kid. Footprints were that long, and they just went in a circle in the middle of the room. They never came into the room. They never left the room. They started and stopped in this little circular pattern.
Wow.
So I snapped a picture, and I think that picture is actually on our website. If not, I'll send it to you. And later on, we were renovating and building our upstairs tap room. We tore down a wall, and we ripped off the plaster, and there was a white child's footprint, as bright as can be, on the backside of the boards from that room. So we took that board off, measured it, same size as the footprints in the mop water, because you can tell by the maple floorboard.
I just got goosebumps. I'm not lying right now.
And we put that board and put it in the upstairs bar. So if you ever go sit upstairs, you can see that white footprint in the bar tub.
Well, you just moved to the top of my list. Because you've always been on the list of places to visit, but you definitely have moved to the top of the list.
Well, thank you. We have a. So
have you ever done any like research to try and find out who it might be?
There's two firefighters that died in service at or near the building, but beyond that, nothing that I can find with children.
Hmm.
And the Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters got electronic equipment.
No.
Got some, they got a name that said John. They've got some pretty good audio, but no, I've never been able to
get some EVPs out of there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of.
Wow.
I'm so tired.
That's all right. Before we keep going, I do have a question. I'm just going to ask it to everyone, and it's very simple. Do you guys believe in ghosts?
Yes. I mean,
ghost spirits, sure. Spectrals, whatever else the one lady said.
I've actually seen one.
You've seen a ghost?
Yes.
Which is
why I believe in it so strongly.
Okay. I'm up for it. Like, I believe that it could exist, but I'm also one of those, like, I'd like to at least see some proof as probably something starts moving behind me.
I haven't seen anything, but definitely I've heard noises. I mean, some of the places that I've lived, one place in particular, I live with a couple friends in Royal Oak, and I remember in getting into the house that I was being given the room where the grandfather of the friend I was living with had died in sleep. And, you know, when I got in there and set up in the room and just that night just started hearing some noises. And I just remember just like looking up and it said, bro, I just live here. I paid a rent. You can do whatever it is that you want to do in this house. You can go spook your grandson if you want to, but I'm just trying to sleep.
Spook your grandson.
me personally, I do believe it, but at the same time, I'm kind of like Ken. I did have one experience with a mutual friend that Ken and I have back in high school, where he took his camera and we shot it into the auditorium, into the seats. We were standing on the stage and he took multiple shots. So he didn't like move the camera or anything like that. And once he showed the photos, we saw like this weird white, like, I don't know what it was, but the other photos that he was taking of the same spot and without moving the camera, he did like rapid photo or whatever. It didn't show it. And I do know that there was at least one suicide in my old high school. Yeah. Back with that, like in the early 90s or something like that. Mm. I don't know if it was in the auditorium, but it was somewhere in the high school but again, I'm like same with Ken. I need to.
So prior to this, Chris, did you believe in ghosts? Does this affirm, like, do you believe in ghosts now?
Yeah, I did. And I do. And I wonder, what's strange about this quote unquote haunting is that it's not consistent. There's people hear different things, see different things. And I read a lot about tulpas, like manifestations of our subconscious. And I wonder if because we had those initial hauntings and it's become a part of the lore of the Mitten, that just the sheer amount of people in that building now, which is never, you know, four firemen lived there at a time. It was never hugely occupied. Now there's hundreds of people in there and talking about this, discussing it, believing it. I wonder if somehow, some way they're manifesting this phenomenon in a way that makes sense to them. And maybe it takes something that may be there in low levels and puts it in high level. I don't know. Like I said, the staff always hears stuff. They have a little ghost journal. They're late at night and they hear like a, you know, they've seen like plates go flying and then they'll write it down on Tuesday, March, whatever this happened. So I comb through those and there's no consistency whatsoever.
Do the plates go flying or were they just blaming the ghost for them dropping a bunch of plates?
That's what I would do.
DVD.
Tina the waitress dropped all these plates.
I am done washing dishes today.
The damn ghost knocked the dishes
Let's blame
off.
Blame the ghost.
Blame the ghost.
They're all
and
dirty.
It seems to be the like after midnight, you know, it's like the witching hour. And when we had the ghost hunters there overnight, all the phenomenon happened right at 3 o'clock in the morning. Nothing prior to that, nothing after that. It was all like within 10 minutes.
So with some of the, obviously, it always seems like a brewery always tends to have a theme with the beers, and like as far as the beer names, mm-hmm. With these and ghosts and supernatural, are there any beers that are themed towards some of those experiences that have happened?
Not really. We do have the last fireman. We found a fireman had written his name in the wall in 1923. His name was John Penning, and he had driven the last horse-drawn hose cart for the city. We named a beer after his horses, which were named Ned and George. But for a long time, we thought that that fireman was the haunt there because he was one of the only names we found in the place. And he worked there for 35 years. And we thought maybe he left some sort of imprint on this space and time. But it doesn't seem to be. It seems to be a little girl, from all I can tell.
Go on, Rob.
Oh, I was just going to say, and I mean, as far as your locations, and I was looking at them, obviously you have, you know, your location in Grand Rapids that, you know, being the firehouse, and there's Northport and Saugatuck being your third one that was added, mm-hmm. You know, with the firehouse, and then I saw that Saugatuck was a pre-Civil War home before, and it was like way, way back in the day, and It definitely seems like going for those older buildings is something that you definitely want to go for. So I guess I got to tell us about that kind of selection process of what you're looking for when you're looking for those locations and what you want in a location for, you know, not only for you to enjoy, but, you know, for your consumers to come in and enjoy the history of it.
Well, for whatever reason, I always pick buildings that need a ton of work and have really low functionality, which is painful. But that is on purpose. We like, you know, the firehouse has so much character. And at one time we thought about buying different firehouses and doing it in different places, but getting that building up to code was such a pain. But I think first and foremost, we look for a place that has character, that has like an authentic vibe, and, you know, we wanted to have standalone buildings. We didn't want it to be in a mini mall or right next to something else. We wanted you to be able to consider all the locations as destinations and discrete entities, not part of a mercantile of shops, you know. But I don't really know why I'm drawn to the old buildings other than the fact that they're interesting and have character.
Well, it's always great to have a nice looking building outside of a cookie cutter, especially for a brewery, because we have a lot of those out here where I'm at. You see them, they're just in a strip mall. They don't really stick out. When you have the brewery that does stick out, it's a nice, unique place. People, I don't know, seem to be drawn more towards it.
Yeah, I feel like it's such a more authentic experience to go to some place that is a native location. It's repurposed something that was something else and breathe new life into it. I feel like, you know, I've been to breweries all over the country, and that was the common thread, was revitalizing areas and neighborhoods and buildings and turning manufacturing space into thriving retail space.
We saw, you know, for the most part, we see a lot of old churches turning into breweries. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be a very common thing, just because these churches, you know, whether the congregation ages out and the kids don't take over from the pastor, and there's just, you know, or it's a, you know, smaller church, because prior to, you know, these mega churches, you know, every town had a couple churches, you know, one for the Baptists, one for, you know, maybe the Catholics, a temple, like these types of things, to where all these people are congregating to bigger spaces as opposed to the smaller city ones. So what
the
I liked
city ones had that all the interesting architecture, which is translates well to repurposing.
Well, I think that's, they had interesting architecture because I think they were probably not built by professionals too. So they probably have some bad fire issues too. The one thing that I loved, and I don't know if you got a chance to come over to this side of town when it was open, but when they opened up Sellerman's over at the old lumber facility. And this place was a huge lumber yard where they were able to just slap down because there was so much open space because that's all they housed was wood. And they were able to like make their entire building out of wood that was just left over. So they were able to start making tables out of them and chairs out of them and a bar out of them. So I think the having a brewery that has a good aesthetic, and we didn't touch about it last week when we talked to Secret Hopper, but that is something, as you know, Wendy said, like, you know, because of the whole ghost story and stuff, that's something that makes people want to, you know, go out there and check it out. But if you have something that looks beautiful, like a building that just looks great, obviously I'm going to want to go look at it because I want to see what's inside. I want to see the hard work that you put in there. And when you have such a dilapidated love that apparently you have, where you go for these old, you know, buildings that you need to work a lot in, I think it gives you the ability to add a lot of your own personal touch. Where was, like, Grand Rapids and Northport aren't close to each other.
No, they're not.
Where did that jump come from?
So we had always dreamed of having a second smaller location, but you're never looking at your bank account and saying, all right, what are we going to do with this money? Let's start another one. No, you're always just trying to get to the next pay period. So we were looking, but not really looking. And a friend of mine moved out of Grand Rapids, went up to Northport, and ran a food truck in the parking lot of a brewery called Northport Brewing. And I went up there and visited him a couple times, and he had the, like, I forget what they were making, but the food truck was called Earth, Wind, and Fryer. He's very pun happy.
Nice.
Nice. Yeah.
But he had kind of mentioned that there was some issues at that brewery, and there was an owner dispute, and looked like they were going to go out of business. And so he was asking me maybe if Mitten could contract brew for them to get them through the summer. And then the conversation turned to, what if you guys just took over? So it wasn't something that was on my radar. We called the landlord, and 2 weeks later, all of a sudden, we're talking about doing this thing that was never something we were necessarily looking for. I barely knew Northport. I thought it was North Point, I think, at that point in time. But I knew it was way far north of Traverse City. Because everyone thinks it's by Traverse City, but it's actually 45 minutes north. It's pretty much where M-22 ends.
Yeah.
Past Sutton's Bay.
Yeah,
so it's a good 3 hours from Grand Rapids.
I haven't even gotten a chance to like to go past Sutton's Bay. Because I think
so if you hit Hoplot, we're like 15 minutes north of Hoplot.
Yeah, you've got, because there's a, I'm sure there's a couple, but there's a casino up there that I remember going to.
Yep. Peshawby Town.
Peshawby Town, yeah.
Yep. The one that used to close at like 2 a.m. every night.
I was working morning, so I was going there at like 3 in the afternoon when I was done.
Actually, I think I said it wrong because I think it's Shawby Town, but. It's, everything up there is a confusing name that does not pronounce the way that it looks. So, yeah, I always say it wrong. It's spelled Peshawby Town, but I think it's Shawby Town.
Let's just call it Peshawby Town. So with, you know, this is the first chance we've had to talk to someone who's been in one of the lightly hit regions of COVID. Because the Traverse City area and the UP are regions 6 and 8, I believe. So you guys started phases earlier up there. How are things going, especially during the summer when it's your vacation money area?
Yeah, it's no joke. It's been the hardest experience of my life, which I guess in some ways says that I did not have that hard of a life. But it's managing the company through and surviving has been, especially with 3 different branches, it's been an unbelievable challenge keeping everyone in jobs, keeping everyone happy, and keeping the works, the staff COVID free. And unfortunately, this week, Wednesday, we had our first staff member test positive for COVID. But for the 120 days prior to that, we served some 25,000 customers every day. I mean, we were open every day, served that many customers with no cases. And we think our person that got sick outside of the workplace. But so even though we're in Kent County, we really haven't had any experience directly with it until this week. And actually, I thought we were past it. I got the call this Wednesday. We had a test. We knew he was sick. So we got a test done, and I was like, "Shit, we almost made it."
Well, that's
it's a very mild case, and he's doing great.
Well, that was gonna be a question.
Yes. Like, how is he doing?
He's a young man and barely any symptoms. You know, like, fortunately,
he's at home listening to this podcast and taking notes so that he can come back to work.
it's been hard, especially in Grand Rapids, and I'm thankful that we have our food menu is very pizza centric, and that translated well to takeout. And during the first shutdown, I remember when the stay-at-home order came, I remember thinking, shit, I can't believe this. We're going to be closed for 2 weeks. This is going to be so hard. You know, that was weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks ago.
I'll post it in the show notes, but have you guys seen the there's a comedian that makes videos on YouTube. I can't think of her name, but she visits her past self and talks about and then does it again like 2 months later to visit her past self who just visited the January self. If we talked, I honestly thought we were going to be back maybe in studio back in like June if everything went to plan. But again, shit changes, and you know, we hear a lot more stuff because Dan's obviously in Arizona, which is turning into a little bit more of an epicenter down there. Congratulations, Dan.
Thank you.
We're number one.
It was those darn casinos.
But so what was the order of your breweries? You went Grand Rapids and then Saugatuck Northport, or Northport Saugatuck?
Northport Saugatuck. So from 2012 to 2014, we had just our pub system. We were brewing around the clock in this 3-barrel system to keep up. And fortunately, we had a lot of customers right off the bat. It was in kind of the heyday of opening breweries, but we were making beers, turning around beers in 9 or 10 days, which is such a terrible brewing sin. But we had no choice. It was either close or push beers along. So we realized we needed to have another facility. We needed to make bigger batches. And that wasn't going to be possible in the engine house because it's, you know, 127-year-old brick landmark. You can't stretch it, nor can you alter the outside in any way because the Historic Preservation Commission has jurisdiction over that. So we have all these, we can't really do anything to the outside. It rings all sorts of bells at the city. So we financed a 20-barrel brew house across the street. So that was our first, it's technically another location, even though it's across the street. And 2016 was Northport, and 2018 was Saugatuck. Last year was our first full summer in Saugatuck. We opened right at the beginning of summer and nobody really knew who we were. So we had kind of a quiet launch there in 2018. We've gone up from about 500 barrels to almost 3,000.
Yeah, I'm trying to think when I went to Saugatuck last, because I worked in there, but I don't recall having you guys like on the list that you were open or opening. So definitely a little bit quieter, which is probably, you know, nice in that kind of town, because that's a lot of foot traffic you have over there where people are just bar hopping, going from one bar to the next. Sure. To the next. I'm actually trying to go down to see exactly where I was working at. And
we're right across from the Mermaid and Coral Gables, or on the other side of the road.
Yeah, I think I was at the Barge, where I was working, based on looking at the nice little Google map that I have here. And
so we're not far down from the Barge,
because I remember walking past the ferry. So yeah, because I don't even remember Coppercraft being there, but I wasn't drinking necessarily in downtown Saugatuck. I was staying off of 196, hopping up and down, because that was my chance to go to Guardian for the first time. Yeah. And that was, I actually went there during their soft opening, not even knowing that it was a soft opening. They're just like, yeah, we just kind of opened our doors to see what was happening.
They're good people, by the way.
I loved Saugatuck. It was so nice. And it was one of the, what was nice is that you get that opportunity to go into a bar when no one else is really there. And so you get that extra hands on, because one, they want contact, so they're just talking to you just to talk to you, because you know, you can only, I know the mantra, if you can lean you can clean, but you can only clean so much before you're just kind of cleaning the same spot over and over again, like what's it, Mo at Mo's Bar, just wiping down the same spot on the bar. when was the last time you brewed a beer? I mean, you said you're not brewing anymore, but when was the last time you brewed a beer?
like start to finish, like pour the grain and everything.
Yeah, did the dirty work.
It's going to be 7 years probably.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah, once in a while we'll come in and do a hop strike and everything, but it's sad. And honestly, I don't even know if I
miss it.
I don't know if I have the goods anymore. These other guys are so much better than I ever was. It would be like, I don't know, Michael Phelps come out of retirement and doing a belly flop.
I feel like that's like something that I've always heard was like when brewers go into business and they have to run the business, that it takes them away from what brought them into the business. And not being able to, I mean, do you miss it? I mean, it sounds like you miss it.
I do. I liked that, the single-mindedness of going in and brewing and trying to get something right, because we were trying to brew and then vendors and people are coming in nonstop. You're constantly getting pulled away, putting your owner head on for a minute. So I never really got that chance to just put my head down and brew. And I do miss that aspect of home brewing, but I don't know. I talk to brewers all the time who come in and want to start their own brewery. And I say, do you like brewing? Yeah, I love brewing. Don't start a brewery. Go brew somewhere. If you like excise tax and HR issues, you know, start your own brewery, because that's what you're going to be consumed by.
And
brewing bear little resemblance to each other.
So I was going to say, you like excise tax and HR stuff then? Is what
no, saying. I just had to learn to live with it.
Learn to deal with it. Yeah.
Actually, my partner right now is doing excise tax back at the pub.
Oh, and, great.
Sales tax, yeah.
So that makes me actually want to ask something. I didn't mean to cut you off, Rob. My apologies. So do you get those guys, we've talked about this before, who come in and tell you how to make your beer better, but they really don't know how to brew? Because I'll tell you, those kind of people make me madder than just about anybody. Yeah. It's like, y'all don't know how to run a business, but you're going to tell this guy how to make his beer?
I need that person is his face.
On the earth.
The face he made when Dan said that. Like his eyes lit up. His smile was there. He's like, oh, I've got so many people in my head. Yeah. Their names, their faces, their ideas.
And those people are born with Untappd already installed on their phone. They come out of the womb ready to just one star your lager. Yeah.
I almost spit out my beer. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to use that and never give you credit for it.
That's fine.
Born with Untappd on their phone.
For memes right now.
Oh, that was good.
One star, your beer sucks, and it's all they say.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it. No. It's one star. I don't like IPAs.
Yeah. You always see that. Nope. Still don't like IPAs. One star.
Oh, jeez. Don't even drink it then.
This is the best lager I've ever had. 1.5 stars.
Oh, my gosh.
It drives someone mad.
I can only imagine, and I'm sure you guys have, you know, gone through and taking some of the reviews, you know, we've talked to a few people, and I remember, and I won't say the name of the brewery out loud just because we like these guys. But they had their first like really nasty Untappd review, and it like got to them. Like it really hurt them, because they made the beer, they sold the beer, and it wasn't a, you know, 2 stars, I don't like IPAs. It was like a 1.5 stars on a beer that gets so many great reviews. What would you say to a brewery or a brewer that gets those types of reviews? Like, how do you just shake it off?
I don't know, because I can't either. Okay. And I've done my best to, you know, to build up a wall against that kind of stuff, but I make the mistake every night of scrolling through my phone right before I go to bed and right when I wake up, and you see that Yelp review and it just gets under your skin. And half the time it's bullshit that they came in ready to be pissed off, and you end up not worrying about it. You end up either ignoring it or jumping on there and defending your staff because they were wrongly persecuted, but it still hurts every time you see it. And I can talk myself into feeling better about it. But I don't know. I'm too much of an empath to be able to shrug them off. They get to me.
Well, it sounds like it's the business side in you that you're making sure that while you weren't there, that your business ran fine and there was no big issues and nothing that you're going to walk to in the next morning of, you know, something crazy happening.
When you're a brewer, though, you're so exposed. You know, there's a whole room full of people drinking your beer, and essentially they come there to criticize it if they don't like it. You know, every craft beer person is always kind of weighing how it fits in with the other examples of that style that they like. So you're always sort of, your heart is out there all the time. And then to hear it come back in bad feedback, it hurts. Because a lot of brewing is pride. You know, you don't do it for the money. You don't do it for the glory.
I appreciate your honesty. And one of the things I want to ask is, do you think Untappd is helping or hurting the brewing industry?
I think if it wasn't that, it would be something else. I think the people who abuse that or who act the way they do on there would just find another outlet. I think it, you know, I liked Beer Advocate. It felt like there were more, there were smarter beer people on Beer Advocate doing reviews than there were on Untappd. Untappd is kind of like, you know, there are a lot of one beer check-in people, you know, and it's always, that's why I always notice when I get a one star out, this person has two check-ins. They created this account just to trash my beer, which drives you bonkers. But yeah, I don't know. I think it is what it is. I think they would find another way to express their dissatisfaction if that wasn't there. I don't think it helps. I think if there's enough reviews over time, it helps you to see the potential of a brand. I guess if you're seeing more people checking in and sharing that beer, you can say, wow, this one seems to be striking a chord, especially in distribution. You don't always get to see the sales like you do in the pub. You can see, oh, we sold 500 pints of this beer this week. They're liking it. Untappd shows you a different story if you're distributing. Who's sharing beers? Who's recommending them to people? So that aspect of it is more useful than the rating, I think.
I had another question and I can't think of it. So I'm gonna pass it off to one of you.
I got a fun question. Go ahead.
So I actually want to hear a little bit more about the charitable giving program.
Yeah.
All the stuff that I could find, there was really no name for it. So I don't know if that's the name.
It's Mitten Foundation.
Okay.
Yep. So we early on, charitable giving was going to be one of our main attributes of our company, even though we didn't know how we were going to do it or even if we're going to have any money to be able to give away. But I had worked in special needs classrooms while I was doing music and advocacy and respite and fundraising for families afflicted by developmental disability was always a big part of my life. And the first gift we made in our opening month was to the West Michigan Miracle League field, which was named after one of the students. I don't know if you can see my tattoo. It's an NMA.
Nice.
It was for Nate Hurwitz, who was a student who I was his classroom aide. He ended up passing away right before the Mitten opened. He was in a wheelchair, at Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. And I always had a very special place in my heart. It was our first gift and kind of the cornerstone we built our whole charitable giving program around. And I think it's become as much a part of our company as anything else, as much as the beer and the pizza. It's beer, pizza, and giving. And we bet big on it. And it came about as a strategy to, A, do the right thing, but B, stand apart. In a world of, in a county with this many breweries, you know, it's hard to stand out. You know, our neighborhood set us apart a little bit, and our food and everything. But I wanted people to choose us because they thought we were good people and they liked what we were doing and they wanted to be a part of it. And we basically built the entire company around that. Last year we raised and donated $75,000 to area nonprofits. And this year, even with COVID, we're going to beat that.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
It's ultimately why as many people choose this as they do, because they know their money is going to a good cause. You know, we vet causes very well. We get invested in them. And I feel like when you charge $5 or $6 for a beer, there's got to be more to it than just how good the beer is. You have to want to care about the people in the company and the work that they're doing. And I always keep that at the forefront of everything we do.
And actually one question that I have that, you know, in terms of, you know, caring about, you know, the people that I saw that I think it was about last month that you guys had put an idea to create a Black Lives Matter shirt.
Yeah.
Featured some of the names of the people that we had lost in George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, among others. And I guess tell us what went into deciding to put that shirt out there and, you know, the other, like any other causes that you guys are doing in terms of, you know, going towards the effort to, you know, rid Black people of undue injustice?
Well, I think the best thing we have to offer any issue or any cause is our platform. You know, we have 20, almost 30,000 followers on social media. So we take that very seriously. And one thing I learned during COVID was that I didn't have any of the answers, you know, for how to pilot a company through this. Nobody knows the answers. Everyone kept coming to Max and me, like, what do we do? So we sort of flipped it around and basically created a strategy from the bottom up. We had the staff design, the COVID procedures, the cleaning schedule. We wanted them to take ownership over the process since they were going to be the ones most at risk. And, you know, they were as qualified as anyone else to do it. So the staff really got vocal and involved in everything during the last 3 months. And that's the best thing that happened since COVID, is that the staff just took way more ownership over the company and their jobs and their place in it. One example being one of our staff members sent me a message on Facebook with that Black Lives Matter shirt or design inside of the Minton logo and said, what do you think? And I said, that's amazing. Let's do this. And it was totally a staff idea. It wasn't even my idea. I felt stupid for not coming up with it in the first place, but COVID has been about, you know, just taking the blows as they come. And so I'm glad that we had a culture where the staff felt comfortable bringing those ideas. And so we worked with the team member that came up with it. I talked to some Black leaders in Grand Rapids. And as we were figuring out the best thing to benefit with it, and you know, I know that the first thought is often philanthropy, but the leaders I talked to said, you guys should be making investments in Black businesses, because what we're really talking about is economic inequality and general and lack of generational wealth is at the root of a lot of these problems. So we sold 400 of those shirts and raised almost $3,500 for an organization called Grand Rapids Area Black Businesses. And it totally changed the lens through which we view our work in 2020 and beyond. Right now we're making a beer with juice from Malamaya Juice Bar. It's a Black owned juice bar. And we're going to donate that money to the NAACP to bring in some speakers for better law enforcement outcomes. And I mean, I'll be honest with you, our industry has a lot of catching up to do on this issue. And 88% of craft beer consumers and employees are white. And that's got to change if this industry is going to thrive and succeed in the future for a lot of reasons. We need different ideas. We need different input. You know, we need a more diverse staff to come up with those ideas. And we need to find ways to change our companies around to get younger people to care about us, because I think the customers that got us here are not going to be the ones that get us there. A lot of the early craft customers are sort of fading out of the marketplace.
One of the things that I want to make sure I know, so you hold me accountable and you remind me, we have a cultural podcast called The Bruise Brothers, which you can like on iTunes and subscribe to them. After you leave us a review on iTunes, please make sure you leave them a review too. But they've been working really, really hard with so many different breweries, including locally Eastern Market and Batch, in regards to the Black is Beautiful, as well as over in Dan's neck of the woods with Wren House, making a beer out there called Black is Excellence, or Black Excellence.
Black Excellence, yep.
I was getting the yeah. two combined. But
I mean, we excellent as a motherfucker too, but just...
But these are great community leaders who not only are community leaders, but are into craft beer, into the industry, and are looking to always not only promote or to promote Black people into liking beer and liking, you know, it's like, you know, it's not just for white people. We'll call it that.
Beer. It's not just for white people. That's the new line for 2020.
Better on draft. It's not just for white people.
Yep. Oh boy, Ken.
I feel like I need to make a beer after that. It's not just for white people ale.
And I think what keeps that in place is that similar to me bias, right? You the hiring pool is customers, and the customers look like you because they've always looked like you, and the brewers look the way that they look, and you subconsciously make hiring decisions based on things you're familiar with. And that's got to change, because Gen Z and the generations that follow are the most ethnically diverse generations ever to walk the earth. And if they're going to get interested in craft beer, craft beer needs to look different too.
And just a few podcasts ago, just a few podcasts ago, we had Fermenta on with Annette May, which who have their Birdie Brown scholarship to help female people of color break into the industry. And as we mentioned on there too, I believe Batch Brewing is going to start doing CBS style classes to help people who are interested in getting into the industry on the front end, because we obviously a lot of, you know, people of color working in the back in the kitchen and you know, not necessarily brewing. So they're going to start doing some projects, which we have mentioned, and I want to mention again, if you know someone or you are someone who wants to join those programs, including anything with Fermenta, reach out to us, betterondraft@gmail.com. We are going to set up our own little scholarship kind of thing to help you guys pay for getting classes, getting, you know, gas money to school if you need it, those kinds of things, because we want to make sure that you guys, we don't want any barriers that you think you have, we want to attempt to eliminate. Now, I can't watch your kids. If you have kids, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can.
I am not qualified for that. 100%.
Not a babysitter there, Ken?
No.
Qualified, but I got too many.
So I don't know how the people at my church when I was younger allowed me to babysit their kids. That was just a big mistake. none of them died yet, so.
That's a high compliment.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a plus.
No hospital visits and nobody died. But as we kind of finish up before, because I'm going to let Dan have the last question, because he's got a question for you that it's a very good question. I want to ask, like, where do you see Mitten Brewing in 2021, 2022? What is your goal for the next year post COVID? How do you want to come out of this?
I think my goal is to exist. And I'm pretty confident at this point to say that we're going to come out of it and stronger in some ways, leaner in many other ways. But the one thing that COVID has provided for everybody is the chance to slow down and contemplate why you're doing this in the first place. And the pace of entrepreneurship, the last 7 years for us, just been about keeping up. You know, how do we brew enough beer? Now, all of a sudden, we can't brew any beer because there's nowhere for it to go. And we have to start thinking about what makes our company special and what kind of company are we going to be coming out of this? And what are people going, you know, there's going to be way fewer options for people. You know, a lot of places are going to close. And the boom may be over. What are we going to do to earn people's business and respect? And I think what Mitten 2021 and 2022 looks like is just a more intentional version of what it always has been. I think we're going to keep leaning into our causes that we support and building in our neighborhoods. And I think that's our reputation for good community work is why we're still alive, why I've outperformed a lot of our peers during COVID, and why we'll survive. And I think a lot of that has to do with your willingness to be vulnerable and take criticism and take ideas from your staff and being prepared to put them into action. And I've always been honest about the ways in which I suck and when it's time to let somebody else drive, and knowing when to recognize that has served us well. So I would say it's that bit of humility that is going to keep us strong.
Well, Dan, nice. You got to follow that one up.
Oh boy. So this is a little more fun. I was taking a look at your menu, and there's a hobby at least half of us on here rather enjoy and have for quite a while. Notice the name of a beer. How did you come up with the name Big Red Machine for your IPA?
So I believe it is the name of a championship Cincinnati Reds team.
Yeah. Oh, geez. So we just got derailed. I had no idea.
So of the man, the myth, who could wear a mask and eliminate
for 54 minutes. Yeah.
let me check.
But yes, the Big Red Machine would be the Reds of the late 70s.
Yes, you're right.
Oh, that's terrible.
I wasn't sure which era it was, but
yeah. So there's also a legendary wrestler named Kane, and his nickname is the Big Red Machine. So That caught my attention. I was like, oh, wait a minute. These guys are wrestling fans. That's kind of cool. But yeah, not quite as fun.
Well, accidental coincidence.
It doesn't go with the baseball theme.
Yeah,
that's actually a very good point.
It's probably a baseball themed beer.
In apparently, like according to these guys and how old I am, in my mid 50s, that was my favorite baseball team.
Hey, Rob, don't worry. I was in my late 50s too, so I probably was right there with you at the games.
Chris, so we know you guys are located in Northport, Saugatuck, and Grand Rapids. Are any of your breweries open to sit down right now?
Yes, all of them.
All of them.
Mm-hmm. Limited hours. We're open only for dinner Monday through Wednesday, but we're open 7 days a week at all three locations.
Where are you pushing your hours? On your Facebook pages?
Yep. And you can go to mittenbrewing.com and see all the different hours for the different locations.
I believe your Instagram is...
Weekends we're open.
Oh, he phased out.
Oh, no. Wait.
All right, he's back. So you cut out. You said weekends are. Let's try this one more time. Weekends are?
Noon till 9 p.m., Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
There you go. Nice. So, Instagram, you guys are at Mitten Brewing Co. Mm-hmm. If somebody wants to help you out with donations, taking part in your charities, how do they get in touch with you?
Mittenfoundation.com. All the contact information is actually a donate form on there. Right now we're trying to build a universally accessible playground and playground floor surface at Richmond Park. And we're working with the city of Grand Rapids and Disability Advocates of Kent County and some other disability agencies to bring that rubber surface to the playground, raising $50,000 right now. And we're about halfway there. So there's information about that project. And we also underwrite all the mobile food pantries on the west side of Grand Rapids, which are especially important now because a lot of people who normally patronize these free mobile food pantries because of income issues, well, a lot of seniors are now patronizing them because they don't feel safe going to the grocery store. So the need for hunger is always changing and it's always there. So we're doing two huge fundraisers right now, which is probably stupid to bite that off, but I love a good challenge and a good old building. So,
Well, what I'll do also is make sure in the show notes, Chris is going to send me in an email those links. So I make sure to share with all of you guys that information. I feel like there's definitely a part two of this interview. We're going to have another day to learn more about your philanthropy and go everything else. But I think that is going to do it for this interview. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. We're definitely going to have to go out to either Saugatuck, Northport, or Grand Rapids, or why not all three?
Thank you, guys.
Go check it out. You guys are in distro too, right? Which beers are in distro that people can pick up across the state?
We usually have three or four brands in distro at any time, and we just got into Ann Arbor, which is the one area that we weren't really available in, so we got a pretty broad reach now.
Well,
so
I will
Country Strong IPA and Mango Gold are going to be the ones you see distributed most widely.
I will have to check that out because I am an Ypsilanti.
And the Triple Crown Brown right now.
And Triple Crown Brown, yeah.
Yeah, I got to go grab that Triple Crown Brown for myself.
Yeah, for sure.
But guys, we will be back in about 10 minutes. So we will be right back with the Better on Draft podcast. Back episode 227, Better on Draft podcast.
Can I ask a question?
Of course,
no, yes, no, please do.
No.
What you're gonna ask what we're all
Matt
thinking.
Bush wearing right now. All right, so can I explain this, Ken, for those that are actually going to be downloading this? And
yeah, so you can watch us on right, YouTube so, and Facebook. The okay, videos so are for, there.
So those of not watching,
I don't know.
Matt has a tank top on with a cat and wearing sunglasses.
Baby.
Drinking a juice box or something. Oh, drinking a drink. Looks like a juice box.
Drinking a drink?
Drink.
A straw.
Through a straw.
So
someone wishes that they were at the beach right now.
It's perfect.
Matt, what are you playing right now?
Yeah, what are you playing?
I got some men going on.
Ugh, God.
Well,
pick a better game.
Usually with segment two is the news, but Matt Bush wanted to hop in for our game. So I'm going to turn it over to Wendy because Wendy created a game for us for this week's game.
All right.
I did. I was just in the process of opening my new beer, though.
What are you drinking?
Sorry Let's if go I over... missed what we're drinking, but during the first segment, I had a Gorilla Juice delivery. So I am drinking the new Gorilla Juice.
Oh,
that's going to upset some people there, Wendy.
I know.
We're going to have to make sure we add that on Facebook.
Drama. Yeah, we're going to have to do the drama llama next.
You know, I 100% understand what Adam had to do, and he did it, and that's
it. Oh, jeez.
Like, I don't know if you guys are aware, one of the big things is that Ascension came out with Gorilla Juice.
Hey, I'm sorry, Ken, turn the video on.
The video is not on the train. There we go. That was probably a good thing with the cat there.
Okay. Come on. Jaeger's back.
So
it's coming now, Tito.
For those of you who were unaware of Ascension, they had their release for Gorilla Juice yesterday, which was an online order release. They had an allotment for members. It was not enough, so they took the allotment from the public and gave it to their members, and people got upset. They can just deal with it because that's the benefits of having a membership to a brewery. That's why, you know, breweries like Witch's Hat, who we'll be having in a few weeks, has a, you know, had a membership for all their Fury releases and Drafting Table and Kunin never had memberships, so they had releases. But, you know, that's just how it works. So Wendy's drinking Gorilla Juice. Matt, what are you drinking? The Claw?
I have a Bon Vie.
Bon Vie.
Good choice.
I haven't tried these yet. This is the first time. And they suck butt. This is probably my least favorite.
Matt, you joined a second time?
Hold on.
Are we getting hacked? Oh.
It felt like it.
Was this gonna turn into the movie Unfriended?
Ooh, that is a good movie for sure. Matt's drinking Bon Vie. He is it's a seltzer.
Unfriended is a
teenage.
All the videos got messed up, Ken.
Yep, I got it all. I'm working on it. And Dan, what are you drinking?
I switched over to a BottleLogic study break. So to compare this, if mint condition is like mint chocolate chip ice cream in a glass, this is a Snickers bar in a glass.
God damn it,
what you got here. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I got it.
Now you
got
to get another one.
I got a contact out there. We've basically been trading And I've been just picking up and shipping him Schramms, and he's been sending me bottle logic. I got to get in touch with him again anyway, because I wanted to get that Ghost Proton, among some other things.
That's another really good one. I drank that last week. That's one of the best ones they put out.
So speaking of bottle logic, I'm going to crack open one that I did get from him, is Stealth Mode.
Nice.
Which is a tart ale that's brewed with blueberries. So,
it reminds me of like me trying to hit on girls during AIM with a different screen name. Stealth Mode.
Oh my god.
What year is it?
2002, Dan.
2001.
Oh, I was close.
An inner Space Odyssey.
Matt was still using AOL keyword Tinder.
Oh, come on.
Did you ever use ICQ?
Oh, of course. Oh,
ASLs, baby. All about the ASLs.
Wow.
Nick, before it gets derailed, what are you drinking?
Still working on that Obelong, that Ukrainian beer, and then I just cracked open another one from the basement. A Keep Calm Chivon Gold Lager from Resignation Brewery.
Okay.
Where do you even find these beers, Nick?
In his basement.
In my basement. I've been
there a little while.
Yeah, a little. You don't even want to know the brew date.
We don't.
You don't want to know the brew date.
I'm
going to
guess like 2012, 2013.
Oh, no, it's a little bit older than that. Are you younger than that?
It's very good with Mother Russia. It's all about the love of the Putins.
That's this one.
Yeah.
So Wendy is doing this week's game. I will keep track of score for you, so you don't have to worry about that. But Wendy, take it away with the rules, regulations, and those of you who are in the chat, feel free to play along.
Okay, so I didn't really come up with any rules, but I do have, I did some research on beer names. So the name I'm going to read you is either a real beer, or it's a beer from a comic book, a television show, a film, or a video game. Okay. So your job is to tell me if it's real or not.
All
right.
So, and I did do the research to find out if somebody else has named it that beer since it's been on that show or book or whatever. So I guess we could go in order.
In order for you, let's do it.
In order for me. So that starts with Nick.
Yes.
Nick.
Nick, you're the source straw, right?
Matt, you're about to get cut.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if you know who owns this Zoom, but it ain't me.
It's me, dude. I got the power. Oh, here we go. Remove.
Yeah, there we go. This goes beyond.
I'll put your ass in the waiting room and make you sit there. It's like purgatory.
Don't get sure with me.
All right, Nick.
Where's the fucking...
So anyway, your name is Hollyoaks.
Anyway. Well, I'm sorry?
Hollyoaks.
Hollyoaks. And what are my choices again?
Is it real or not?
Real or is
real or
it
fake?
Fiction?
I'm going to say that's real.
That is real. Oh. It is from Tenaya Creek in Nevada. It's an oatmeal stout, by the way.
Hollyoaks. I'm in.
You make my dreams come true.
Right? So, Matt, your beer name is Mommy Beerist.
That seems milfy, so I'm going to guess fake.
Incorrect. Mudhound Brewing in Virginia called their cream ale Mommy Beerist.
No way.
I actually cream added that one in because I love the name.
That's a little incestuous.
Sam Adams Bargain Stout.
One more time.
Sam Adams Bargain Stout.
Bargain Stout. Jesus. I'm going to say that's fake.
It is. It's from Mad Magazine.
What would that even be?
I would have been on that because she said Sam Adams.
Well, I would hope it was a stout. Apparently, Mad Magazine had a whole series of Sam Adams beer names.
Oh my gosh.
Rob, Rhubarbara Strassand. I love it.
I'm going to say it's real.
It is. Brew Detroit put out a wit beer called Rhubarbara Strassand.
And local.
So this one, I'm going to say the name that I found online. It was Pathological Lager. Ken, that's you.
Oh, that's me. Okay. I think that's a real beer.
There is a couple of beers named Pathological Lager, and unfortunately, I didn't save the brewery name in there, which is probably good because the actual name is Friends Don't Let Friends Vote Drumpf Pathological Lager.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
and it is not a lager, oddly enough.
Don't be a man from drinking your juice in the hood.
Yeah, it is lager. A farmhouse ale. Oh, it's Dock Street Brewing. I did have it in there. I don't have my glasses on.
All right. So right now, me, Rob, and Nick get a yes. Dan and Matt get a no.
Wait, I was right on mine.
Matt, what? Yeah, I thought.
Yeah, I think I was the only incorrect person.
Matt was the only one incorrect. Dan, I just
maybe
wanted
it's
to give
the
you
tank
a,
top.
I just wanted to give you a handicap. All right.
Ooh. So, Nick, we're back to you.
Okay.
Bendiri English Ale. It's Bendeery.
That sounds real, so let's go with real.
That one is fake. It actually was on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the TV show.
I haven't gotten that far in the Marvel series.
I didn't even know it was a TV show, so but I figured you guys might.
I couldn't get into any of the non-Netflix Marvel shows.
Like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah, it was rough.
Yeah. Okay. I like the Netflix one, so what was that?
It's because they can swear.
Daredevil, Punisher, Luke Cage, and Jessica Jones.
My wife and I were still in the movies right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you forgot Iron Fist. Yeah,
Iron Fist.
Yeah. What was great about Iron Fist? Because I don't think Punisher was in that series or set that I recall. Like I don't think. Oh no, Punisher was the villain technically in season one of the
Punisher was great, the Thomas Jane version from like 2002.
Oh my no. God.
Where he like fucks up Kevin Nash.
No,
that was
this,
a good Punisher.
This version of Punisher was amazing.
Bernthal has been the best Punisher since Dolph Lundgren. Shut up.
Thomas Jane. And he was fucking
so Matt.
Roger Maris.
Matt.
In
yeah, but Matt, Jane. You're up.
Got Matt, it. You're up. Sit your ass down.
I feel that's like you skipped one. People to do that.
Literally.
Can I get a name of origin?
Citra, Citra, ass down.
That's got to be a real beer, or I'm not.
It is, not, against the grain.
Yes. I think I have a can downstairs.
Dan, Mac 50.
Mac 50.
That's the first. That sounds like 50 ounce beer.
Not an E40.
That sounds like a malt liquor, like right up your alley, Dan.
That's got to be real.
It is not. It's from the movie Idiocracy.
Damn. You're that Mac 50 over there.
Mac 10's great grandson.
Rob, Yellow Snow IPA.
That is real.
Rob's like, I had one
of
those.
Do you know who does it?
I cannot remember who does it, but I remember seeing it before, like when I was down in Kentucky and going to the Party Source.
It is a Pilsner from Rogue Ales.
Rogue, okay.
You know, we interviewed the former owner and CEO who just retired last year, John Mayer, a long time ago. I'm Better on Draft. Go check out
that episode. Is his body of Wonderland, by the way?
Yes.
Shut up, Matt Bush.
Pretty sure you were on that episode.
And Ken O'Glum's non-alcoholic beer.
Oh, Jesus.
I feel like that could be O'Glum's since it's not alcoholic or O'Glum's.
I am going to go with fake. It is a
It
fake
is fake.
Beer.
It's from The Simpsons.
I had zero, like, zero. So it's me and Rob with two, everybody else with one. Let's go through one more round. You got enough for one more round?
I do. Nick Polygamy Porter.
I just want a beer to be called the Nick Polygamy Porter.
Well, it's Polygamy Porter, not the Nick Polygamy.
Nick's many wives love this beer.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to say that's true.
One of my favorite beers.
It is
one of my favorite porters
from Utah. Which I'm pretty sure they could only get away with it in Utah.
Wait, it's
polygamy beer. A polygamy porter is what it's
called. Polygamy porter in the state of Utah.
I'll send you some, Nick. It's really good.
I feel like we've talked about that beer.
That's what she said.
I've drank it on the show since since we've been back like this.
Matt, girly girl beer.
You say girly girl?
Girly girl beer.
Can you spell the first girly?
G-I-R-L-I-E.
It's not Todd Gurley. So
go figure, because he's playing Madden 21 right now.
I'm going to go girly girl is fake beer.
That is true. While there are variations of the name, like girly beer from Front Porch, it is from Married with Children.
I'm trying to find pictures of these. I just want to see what the labeling looks like.
Yeah, you'll have to send me the results so that we can post it in the show notes. Who's
Dan,
up next?
The Great Big Kentucky Sausage Fest.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's too ridiculous to be fake. That's got to be real.
It is real. It's actually a collaboration with Against the Grain, and I have no idea how to say this name. It's Amager Brighouse from Denmark.
That's racist.
It's an imperial brown ale. I would try it. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, it's a brown ale. You already sold me.
Right.
I found a picture of the girly girl beer from Married with Children, by the way.
Okay.
Is that a shoe salesman beer?
No.
Geriatric Hipster Club.
Oh.
Geriatric Hipster Club.
Hipster Club.
How aged is that?
It's a dark ale, if that helps.
Geriatric. So it's the Bernie Sanders beer.
The Bernie Sandals?
Right.
You have to wear socks and sandals to drink that beer.
You could market the hell out of that. All right. So
geriatric hipster.
Game theory would mean that, like, basically the first two I got were real. But so by game theory, that would mean that this was fake. But we're probably close to opposite day. So I'm going to say this is real.
It is real. The brewery actually did this one.
Did you say Israel? Is this anti-Semitic?
Oh, my God, Matt.
What?
Matt, you're trying too hard today.
What was
Oh, man.
Can you stop with trying to pull like a Nick Cannon on me and shit? Just chill.
Hey, Mariah wouldn't lie on me.
Hey, I ain't gonna
And Ken, I'm going to go with spunk beer.
Oh, boy.
Jesus.
Rob almost just threw up in his
glass. That's what she said.
I feel like this is beer that you can. Here's my theory. You ready? This beer was created because of American Pie. So it's not a fake beer because American Pie didn't have a beer named it, but because of American Pie, somebody made it. So I'm going to say it's real.
This is a Russian beer.
While there are many variations, such as Spunk Rock, spelled R-A-W-K, and Santa's Spunk, it is actually a beer from Tank Girl, which is a comic.
Yes.
Oh, Tank Girl.
Santa's Girl. Spunk.
Tank that's, Girl. That's Santa's what we're right. Spunk.
It doesn't make it any better.
I honestly...
You know what? You've got spunk.
So we all lost. Rob won with 3. The rest of us had 2. So to give ourselves a second place, I am going to bow out, but I'm going to give Wendy the opportunity. I'm going to ask her a question. Or actually, no, we're going to do it the way we did a tiebreaker last time. So just in order that I have right here, the question is, in what year did the Brooklyn Bridge open? So to break the tie, I am just going to forfeit. So it's between Nick, Dan, and Matt. In what year did the Brooklyn Bridge open? Nick.
1924.
Nick says 24. Dan.
Oh, we're not going higher or lower?
Nope, because this is just the closest. Yes, you can go over.
Let's say 1890.
That's where I was at. I was actually a little earlier. I was thinking like 1878.
Well, Matt or Rob, you already won, so shut the fuck up. Your vote doesn't matter. You could be 100 years off, and I don't care.
Oh,
but wasn't Rob there?
Whoa.
All right. So what are my options?
Your options are to guess a year of what the Brooklyn Bridge was open.
So Nick said 1920.
24.
Okay, that's stupid. Rob said 1890, right?
Rob's number doesn't count.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dan said 1890.
Sure.
Yep.
I'm going to go 1889.
Good job, Rob. I'm pretty sure you gave it to him.
Matt Bush to second place for that one.
Oh! What's the number?
The correct year is 1883.
I win.
That's on me. I thought it was just you two. I was not.
You didn't win. So you didn't win, Rob.
No, you got second place. And as Theo from the Road Rules always says, second place is the first loser.
Theo from Road Rules? How long ago was that?
Yeah. What a name to pull out.
Was that early 2000s?
Oh my God, I love it.
What about Mark from Road Rules? Remember Mark with his hair?
And I love that show.
So, guys, we're going to actually move segment two to segment three. So go refill your beers. Matt, thank you so much for joining us for the game. We will let you get back to your Todd Gurley fandom over on Madden 21. And we'll be right back.
Let's not sugarcoat it.
We'll be right back with the Better on Draft podcast.
Yeah.
All alone was a fever in my bones. Yeah, I was standing with a mass book in my hands. Up in smoke, yeah, I was ashes on the floor. And it's so typical of you to let me burn. Let me burn. Let me burn.
Are back, Better on Draft podcast episode 227. We are live. Matt Bush disappeared. I'm assuming the Lions lost as per usual, whether it's Madden or
Were they playing?
No. He was playing PlayStation Madden.
Did you not hear the reaction like 30 seconds ago?
Yeah, you wouldn't have caught it on the live, but not the post live for sure. But we're back. I'm almost done with my beer for sure. I
got that pitcher wrapped up. What's going on?
Here's the results. We got that here, and obviously my glass full. Keep topping it off like a good boy. Anybody drinking anything new before we get into the news?
I'm actually going to hold off until we start the news, because that's the first thing that I'm going to bring up in the news is going to be the first beer that I'm going to open.
Well, as right. I say,
here is Robert with the beer news.
So for those of you watching the video, absolutely nobody could hear the sound. So that's just me making sure they know the sound's going. So Rob, the news.
All right, the news. So there was a bit of, I guess you could say, confusion that happened out in the land of West Hartford, Connecticut this week, as a customer at World of Beer was served a bottle of Yellow Belly. I know probably for some of you guys that you know what Yellow Belly is and you know what everything looks like when you get a bottle of Yellow Belly. But obviously with this particular customer, that he did not know what he was getting. So definitely keep that in mind. So as it was told by the individual's wife, the man asked for a suggestion for a beer while he was in World of Beer. And the server had suggested Yellow Belly, which, you know, to give you a little bit of context of what the beer is that it is a peanut butter and biscuit imperial stout. However, it is not made with any peanut butter or biscuit at all. Clearly, it's like with that suggestion, the guy definitely thought that beer sounded pretty good. And he said, okay. And the server apparently had just showed up with the bottle and put that on the table. And I guess for those that are watching, I will put this up here. I will also describe this for those who will probably listen. But essentially, when he got the bottle on the table, the bottle looks like this. Oh, now, it says Yellow Belly on here. I will explain the cease and desisted version of the version in a minute. But basically, this is what shows up on the table. Now, for somebody who is not aware of what the beer is and the message that the beer gives, when that shows up on the table, I can understand that you can have a definite feeling of, you know, hurtfulness and, you know, a certain amount of, you know, being despicable, of disrespectful of what this show, when this shows up. But it does have a story behind it. And the thing is that the people who got the beer, they did look up the story behind it and understand that the reason this is done this way and is called Yellow Belly is that it is to provide people with, you know, that this is a person who is without courage, fortitude, or nerve. In essence, a coward, which is actually in the writing on the label that's on here. And that this is something that is to bring awareness to people to that this image is someone who is the image of someone who, in old terms, a yellow belly is a coward. However, despite looking at that information and understanding that information, they still reached out to World of Beer and were looking for an apology for, you know, for this beer being served, because the server didn't explain anything in terms of the beer. They just put it right on the table and didn't provide any context to the consumer at all. And for somebody who is not aware of Omnipolo and them making this beer, because they've been making this since 2014, that it can definitely, you know, with the imagery that comes with the bottle, that, you know, it can bring out a certain level of hurtfulness, which, you know, I understand. But, you know, there's a lot of things that came out with this. And like I said, there's been the request for an apology. As for what I've seen, World of Beer has not come out with an apology. And in fact, they have moved for to make sure that all of this, all of the bottles of Yellow Belly that are in any of their locations are removed from their locations. Hendrik Fenty, the brewer, one of the main brewers at the Omnipolo, he obviously has seen all of this that has happened, and he has come out with a statement that is saying that he stands behind the design of the bottle and stating, quote, "We want to use our craft to talk about the things that matter to us. As a Black-owned and operated brewery, in the case of Yellow Belly, it was brewed to show a deep concern over racism in Europe, the United States, and beyond, a question that has run through the DNA of our company since its founding 10 years ago. Now, like I said, World of Beer has announced that they are removing this from all of their locations. And I would probably say that for myself personally, the only thing that I find offensive is that, according to the wife who put this post out on Facebook, is that they were paying $40 for this bottle, which...
Her name Karen? Was her name Karen, by the way?
Matt, shut up. Now, $40 for this bottle is ridiculous, considering you can get this in a store for not even $15. So that's like complete World of Beer convenience. But I guess what I'm thinking is that, you know, does World of Beer owe any type of apology? And, you know, I guess one other thing that I need to bring up is that, as you see on here, it's the cease and desisted batch. As it shows right there, it's the final batch, because they were in a dispute with another brewery that was in Europe that was making a Yellow Berry Belly Gold, which they lost that dispute, and now this is actually the last time that they're going to make this beer under the Yellow Belly name. So the beer is still, as far as I know, it's still going to be out there, but they are not
different name,
the Yellow Belly name anymore. But
I'm going to be honest. I as much as I don't want to give the benefit of the doubt, but if you're given the opportunity to sell a $40 bottle of beer, no questions asked, because he said, give me what you suggest and I suggest a $40 beer and you say, okay, I don't care if that's fucking a 40 of Miller High Life. Like, I think he's going for tip.
So straight up, I've had that exact thing happen, not 40, but it was 25 for a glass of beer, for a pint of beer. Somewhere local to here was a very good barrel aged beer and not worth the money, but I did also ask them to give me what they suggested. So I absolutely agree with you. So as far as the apology, I think we're getting a little too sensitive here. The story of the beer is on the bottle. If you look this up, you'll also see the story. The brewer told you what this is all about, and you're still demanding an apology because someone gave you this beer. Where are we at right now in society that you're demanding that?
I agree with you, as I'm trying to like do the right pointing on the video. I agree with you, Dan. But this is also a fail on World of Beer for not training that employee to know what beer they're selling.
Exactly. And I'm going to jump in, because I'm going to give you my reaction first on the beer. I'll be honest, I've never tried it because of the packaging, but I never took the time to read the packaging and see what was going on. And I'm definitely versed enough in beer to know that what is thrown out there up front is not always what it seems to be. So that's on me. The apology thing, maybe, yes, I think World of Beer might owe an apology because they didn't take the time to explain, this is why I am suggesting this beer. Or, hey, this beer might be different from what you expected. Here is why that it is this way.
But
going to a place like World of Beer, I expect their servers to be knowledgeable enough to explain to me information about the beer.
But you know what? As a bartender, You usually ask somebody, when someone says, bring me a beer, you usually ask them, do you like hoppy beers? Do you like stouts? What are your flavor profiles that you like? So while we have only a news brief, I would imagine the bartender asked the questions. Because, I mean, as a bartender myself, I would say, what kind of beer do you like? And I would then find them a beer that they kind of like, as opposed to bring me something and then just.
So I agree with that. But the best beer bars that I have ever been to, they give me background on the beer, not just this is a beer I think you'll like.
But hold on, Matt. Are you talking beer bars or beer chains?
Because beer World of Beer, yes, it's a beer bar, but it is also a place that you go and expect to get information about the beer you go to.
And honestly, I mean,
you're drinking.
If a bottle shows up like this, there should be
some sort of explanation
that is being given. Because if you're giving the suggestion of the beer that it should start with, you know, not well, either start with when that person says yes, that's when I'll take it, or when that server shows back up with the beer to say, all right, I need to explain this bottle because this is
right.
Very clear with some of the imagery that is on here that can definitely be taken, especially for, you know, Black people that are around here, that we will take this a very certain way. Obviously, with the yellow belly that's on here, when I look at this, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, coward. I get it. I understand, like, the old lingo. But
is there information on the back that talks about why they have that?
Yes. The actual explanation is right here, right on the back. That gives the statement, and to which Henrock, that, you know, that he quoted what the label is on the bottle or on the packaging here to explain that, and that was what was there, and you know they had seen that was what was there, but there's still the fact that this server just showed up with the bottle and just. I'm guessing it was like one of those busy nights or like, all right, here's your beer. And it walked off. And, you know.
So really there's two people at fault. It's the server that didn't explain why they were giving you this beer or anything about the beer, knowing that it's probably going to be a little bit of a shock factor, like to anybody that gets that beer. And the person who didn't bother to read the label to find out why it's presented that way. So.
I think they read the label because from the Facebook post that I saw that they still read the label, but they still wanted an apology. And I think that most of the apology that they wanted was the simple fact that this bottle showed up on the table with no explanation whatsoever. And it gave off this connotation that this person is essentially giving me a KKK beer.
And that's honestly what I believe that what World of Beer should apologize for is giving them that without any type of explanation. Mm-hmm. I don't think that them removing all of the bottles from all of their locations presents a good message at all.
No, I'll go to you right after Dan, I promise. Okay. I think the problem is that maybe it also the person who saw it, whether it's the man or the wife or whatever, like when you get that, and mind you, I can't understand how someone would feel being Black and getting that bottle with no context. How do you respond to that? How do you like? So I can't say, but speaking in context of how I would feel or how I would think I'd feel or how I'd be like, you know, what, why, where, like I would start asking the W5s, like, why am I getting this beer? Where am I? Like these types of things. So I would just start questioning a lot of things before I would throw an Instagram post out there or my girlfriend or wife or whatever the relationship was. Dan.
So I don't know how the people are trained at this place, but are we really expecting someone who's working for a couple of dollars in tips to give an in-depth explanation about any beer they put on the table, especially if it's a busy night?
Now, in regards to local smaller chains, No, you know what? Let's even go further, because I can speak on Brass Taps, which is about at the same level of World of Beer. Brass Taps goes through a huge training for you to even be able to start selling anything. You have to go through, you don't have to go through CBS like you do 8 Degrees Detroit. Like, to sell at 8 Degrees Detroit, you have to have your CBS. But at Brass Taps, like, they have a full training program for you. So I can only assume, based on the industry itself and based on World of Beer, that there is a training program. And again, not to circle back to my first point, but I just feel like he was just trying to sell a $40 bottle of beer to make an $8 tip.
Right.
I don't honestly, because of everything that's on the bottle, everything that's on the label, and things that are going on right now, like, I don't think this person was trying to sell a KKK bottle to a black man. I think he was trying to sell his top dollar bottle to someone who said they would buy the top dollar bottle.
And that's pricey for that bottle.
We could talk about fucking restaurant excise tax in regards to how much they charge for the bottle. Dan, you shook your head. I feel like you don't agree, or
no? I do agree. I wasn't shaking my head. No, I agree with you.
Yeah, I think taking aside the beer, the Yellow Belly. Yellow Bella, whatever it's called, Yellow Belly.
Yellow Belly Gold, the other one.
Yep. I am very, very confident that it is just someone who came in. Like, I've gone to breweries, just as Dan said, as I'm sure we all have. We've gone to a bar, gone to a brewery, and we said, we want your number one cocktail, or we want your number one beer, or we want your best beer. And if you came to me and said, what is it, peanut butter and chocolate or whatever?
Peanut butter and biscuit?
And I'm like, fuck yeah, peanut butter and biscuit. It's $40. Fuck yeah. Like those are the kinds of, like, conversations. Now, mind you, he might not even said $40. He just said, yeah, we got this peanut butter biscuit beer. Yes. You've agreed to a $40 bottle without knowing it. So yep. I feel like the most amount of shadiness in this transaction was either the bartender trying to sell a $40 bottle of beer without saying it was a $40 bottle of beer, or it. Matt, you were shaking your head. I want to make sure you're...
Yeah, no, honestly, you know what it is? It's kind of what your point. It's kind of hard to, like, figure out where the problem is, because I don't know the race of the consumer unless
he was black.
So I can't speak to the other community, because if you put a hooded bottle in front of me, I wouldn't think too much of it, but I'm sure that's a white kind of thing. So my thought is,
it's a problem then.
It is. Well, I mean,
I'd be like, what Mississippi brewery is this from?
Hold on. I think what Matt's trying to say is that it's not the first thing that would come to his mind.
And again, that's why I asked Rob, or just, I see things differently than the rest of humanity. So I don't know. To me, I would look at the label and read it and try to get an answer from it, as opposed to having a negative reaction to it. But that's neither here nor there. That's one thing. My thought is, kind of to Caden's point, I would have drank the beer. My thought is the purchaser said, hey, I'll take your recommendation. And then the bartender said, what kind of beer do you like? The purchaser said, I like these kind of beers. And then the Yellow Belly was given to the bartender, or to the consumer, kind of at Ken's point, to make the tip. And my thought is, the person who consumed the beer probably said, holy shit, I just paid $40 for a beer. I'm going to start a fuss, because this is fucking stupid to spend $40 for a $20 beer. So, I mean, regardless of race, religion, creed, whatever. There's no way I would ever pay $40 for 12 ounces of beer.
And rather than...
I started a small fire in a restroom somewhere.
And rather than posting something on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, why didn't they just ask them, why did you give me this beer?
Well, and they probably did. But the thing is that to a black consumer, that imagery is going to be paramount over everything else. I mean, considering everything that has happened to Black people over the last 300-400 years, that when you look at a bottle that is going to look like somebody in a KKK hood, that's the first thing I'm going to see. I will probably hover down to that yellow belly part. I'm probably go to that label, but the first thing I'm going to see is going to be that hood. And that is the first thing that is going to trouble me the most. And I understand where this customer is coming from, because without the context, without any of the information, without knowing that this is a Black owned brewery, without knowing the history of that Black person who has been through, you know, who has been through racism and being bullied, that history is not there. It's only this bottle that is in front of my face. And all I see right now is that hood. And that shit is going to bother me. If I am completely new craft beer and I see that I have a problem with that. And if a server can't give me the context of what that is and just sets that on the table, I'm going to be fucking furious.
Can I ask you a question though, in all honesty, like in the layers that you just played, and I don't want to be, you know, flippant, but if you go to a Black owned brewery as an African American yourself, with a few Black owned breweries, don't you know that you're going to a Black owned brewery? And B, I don't forgive the server if they were just so ignorant to do that. But I feel like there's context that's like, I feel like this is a cable news story. Like, white person gives KKK bottle to Black customer, where I feel like there's a lot more left. And I feel like, if you're a Black beer drinker and you know that you're at a Black brewery, I think you should know that. And I think that, Rob, I think you might agree with that. Like, because we've talked about talking about counting allies at.
Yes.
And, you know, so yeah. Like, if you're an African-American and you go to
this black. Get that right.
I'm trying to be PC here.
Well,
Mr. Kong.
How many people prior to this whole yellow belly thing knew that OmniPollo was Black owned?
I didn't. No idea. Robert showed me the bottle. I had no context of the bottle.
But that's the thing, is it's not the bottle. It's the fact that not a lot of white people are aware of what Black owned breweries are, who they are, where they are. You know, you especially, and let's just be honest, in living in our own American world, is that it is a European brewery, and therefore you just assume European and you don't think Black. It's, you know, it's just not something that crosses your mind as a white person. And that could be just me, and it could be other people. That's perfectly fine. I'm speaking just for me, Ken Konarzewski of Better on Draft Podcast, which you can find us betteronDraft.com, Better on Draft on Instagram, Better on Draft on Twitter.
And you've, of course, very obviously never been to France.
I haven't. No, I
or
I was,
England.
I was
or
supposed
England
to go
for
to
that
fucking,
matter.
I was supposed to go to fucking Europe in 2020. And,
yeah, I'd just be getting back from Italy. You want to talk about ruined trips? Let's go.
Yeah, I was supposed to be back.
Vacations.
I was supposed to be in Europe this year, but COVID fucking hit, and I bought a house, and all these things like just happened. But you know what? I will probably take my, and as I was telling my girlfriend way before that my I plan on going to Europe by myself. I think we're gonna meet in Scotland. I think she's gonna fly out to Scotland and maybe do like Scotland and Ireland and like the whole that area with me. But again, I don't know these things. And I think people don't know these things unless they research. And I think, Rob, you have a reason to research, for simply because, as you do at beer festivals, you look for your allies. You look for the people to support in your community in beer. I didn't know it. And it kind of understands my own biases. Like, I realize what I don't know. And as Matt does not understand the whole game. But yeah, I still believe, like, I agree with, I think we're all on the same page that I think that the bartender was looking for a high tip. Bartender saw an opportunity to sell a $40 bottle of beer to someone who was willing to pay $40 for a bottle of beer. Because nothing in this article talks about a $40 bottle of beer except just for the price itself. Not that it was over or under, that it was just a $40 bottle of beer.
I mean, if that shit was like a bomber of a barley wine, I'd be up for that. But Jesus, that's a lot for a 12 ounce.
That's a whole lot for a 12 ounce.
Well, hold on.
I do have a question.
What was that?
I do have a question.
All right,
go ahead. Sorry, Wendy.
Go ahead, Matt.
I mean, is it real? If there's a limited supply, who hasn't spent $40 on a beer?
The thing is,
I'm looking at you
from my perspective, and having, you know, being spoiled with how they market. Shout out to Ashley, with them having, you know, four cases of this stuff sitting on the floor. It's not limited here. That's for damn sure.
But maybe, what if it was a, I mean, I guess I don't want to sit here and apologize for a white kind of apologetic beer, but like, what if it was a beer that's never in that market? What if it's something that's hard to get?
Then, I mean, then that's,
you know what? I almost kind of feel dirty even like playing what if games.
That's perfectly fine. But I think the thing that bothers me is that with the imagery of the bottle, for somebody that is recommending this type of beer, and I kind of feel like recommending this beer to someone that
Matt, thank you.
They don't have, you know, even if they do have the idea of what they're getting, that it needs to start with an explanation of what's showing up on the table. If it's just the bottle itself without the wrapping, then that is something where somebody can look at that. But with the wrapping that's being on the bottle, that I feel needs to have some sort of explanation to say, all right, I recommended this beer, but I need to tell you about this. Like, even when they go to the bar to get the bottle, that should be a reminder to basically say, holy shit, I need to tell this person what this bottle represents, everything about this brewery and this bottle, what it represents, so that it doesn't come off as, you know, any type of offense.
And, well, I see the issue is poor training here, more than anything.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this is poor. But that's the thing. We don't know.
It might not be that they weren't trained badly, though.
It could have just been a busy night. It could have been that the server was out there and just like, well, shit, I need to get these beers over to this table, put the beers on the table, and went to the next table that needed to get their orders in. We don't know if it's an issue with training.
I 100%, just because World of Beer is a national chain, and when you deal with national chains, there is a lot of training programs in there that are just not throw you on the floor. If you go work for a fucking Applebee's, you're not getting on the floor the first night. Like, these, there are a lot of things that happens at these restaurants. Like, if you go look at the movie Waiting with fucking Dane Cook and Ryan Reynolds and Justin.
Hey, Long. Don't you dare. Don't you say, that's my favorite movie. Don't you dare. You tread lightly.
I'm using it as there's a whole training program for these types of large chain restaurants.
And there's a penis showing game with all of them.
We're gonna continue.
See what
the
now?
Story. It's about the movie.
If you don't watch the movie, like, you're not a human. I'm sorry. You've never worked in the service industry.
So that's the thing, is that I think World of Beer has it. I just think it's one of those things to where we've talked about minimum wage, and we talked about minimum wage in the industry, and you're literally paying someone, you know, $3 an hour. And if I'm going to guarantee you an $8 tip on this 1 12 ounce beer, you know, even if you get 15%, $6, like, these are the kinds of things that come to my mind first when it comes to that. I feel there was poor, now mind you, so they have basic training. But when it comes to these specific beers, you're not going to know every beer. you should, and a lot of these places make you know these beers. Like, you're supposed to try them. You're supposed to look at the tasting profiles. When a new beer gets tapped, you're supposed to go to that, pre-shift meeting where you're going to try that beer so you know how to sell that beer. Now, you can't necessarily crack open a beer, like a bottle of Yellow Belly, to understand the tasty notes. But again, if I'm a 23-year-old kid and I'm looking to make tips that night, like, again, that's the thing, is I'm just gonna sell everything high level the second you give me the opportunity to.
So quick question though, I guess, just gotta go around real quick, yes or no, should World of Beer pull all of these bottles off of the shelves?
No,
absolutely not.
No,
because the bottle, I think the bottle is meant to send a message, and if we lose the message, especially in the climate that we're in today, we need to have conversations that are uncomfortable, are unintended at times, but they need to be had. So I think what has to happen is the owner, the beer buyer, the previous producer needs to tell the story so the bartender can tell the story and can start the conversation for the end consumer to have that conversation that's awkward, uncomfortable, to where we as humans, in especially the climate we're in today, can break that ice. And that bottle is meant to break the ice, regardless of how uncomfortable or anything that is. So I'm going to put a beer in front of you, and you're going to call me a racist, but I'm going to say, hey, actually, turn the beer around and say, hey, actually, this beer has made my awesome African-Americans. This is why they made it this up.
They're European.
Yeah. He's not American.
he's a black European.
Yes. Of Ethiopian descent. But to be honest, Matt, that is probably the smartest thing you've said about anything.
I was going to say, I agree with Matt Bush. Like, what is happening?
I actually agree with Matt Bush.
I 100% think this podcast is over, guys. Episode 227 of the Books Better on Draft podcast. Matt, thank you so much for joining us. Guys, you know what? Let's end on this high note. And no matter think of your beer, we think it's...
Hold his blood.
Better on Draft. Have a good night.
Kyle, Michigan beer. Peace.